and I mean it. I can't do one more push-up. I can't even hold the downward dog pose. I head upstairs with my arms dangling by my sides. We call it a day and I relax on my couch. I grab the sports business journal and get caught up on recent transactions. The few hours of downtime are like a vacation, and I'm feeling cozy. Workout totals, 16.1 miles and 700 push-ups. Day 24, whiteout. The tougher the conditions, the more I like my odds. Seal. Connecticut, 5 degrees, 0600. We wake up to blizzard conditions. 16 inches of snow with 30 miles per hour winds and minus 7 degrees with wind chill. Miraculously, my groin feels better. Maybe it was just a cramp. Repeatedly scrolling across the bottom of my television screen is an extreme weather warning. The local news in Connecticut is advising everyone to stay inside unless it's an emergency. This is fucking perfect, Seal says. I guess he considers this an emergency. He stares at the TV, bobbing his head like he's listening to Jay-Z, only he's not wearing any headphones. Finally, he says, we gotta head out. We run 3.5 miles in the mountains. Seal decides to wear the 50-pound weight vest. He's out of his mind. I can't explain how hard this run is, in these conditions, with a 50-pound weight vest on. When we get home, I think I'm frostbitten. My shirt is so cold and wet, it hurts to take it off. In fact, my shirt is actually frozen. When I manage to get it off, it sits upright in my chair. We do 144 push-ups, plus an extra 10 for good measure. 2 o'clock p.m. Sarah goes outside to get the mail. The mailbox is at the end of the driveway, about 50 yards away once you walk out the front door. The only obstacle or threat between our front door and getting our mail is the grass, which is covered by snow. The danger would be that someone slips on a patch of ice. What I mean is, getting the mail is not a high wire act. It's not something on our radar as far as a thing to worry about. Sarah returns holding 3 envelopes and a fashion catalog. She begins to open the catalog. Seal is livid. Sarah, you need to mix up your pattern.
Pattern?
Yeah, your pattern. Pattern! The time you get the mail, that's your pattern. It's the same every day. It's predictable. I get the mail after lunch, she says. That's the most convenient time.
Why after lunch? Seal asks, baffled. That seems common.
Because that's when the mailman comes, she replies. He delivers the mail after lunch.
Exactly. You know that. And I know that. The mailman most definitely knows that. So I bet everyone knows that. For sure your neighbors know that.
But I'm just getting the mail. At my house. On our property, she says.
Just do me a favor. Change up the pickup time. Go an hour or so later tomorrow. Break the pattern, Sarah. Break the pattern.
2100. Sarah and I have dinner before we put Laser down for bed. Nothing fancy, just some veggie burgers and salad that we whipped up. Shortly after we get Laser to go to sleep, we get into bed together to watch some TV. I'm fading into sleepland but can sense that Sarah is still up and watching CNN. At around 9 o'clock p.m., I feel Sarah get out of bed. She's doing it in a way not to wake me, but I'm slowly learning to be on alert. I'm awake.
Where are you going, sweetie, I ask.
I hear something in the basement. It sounds like our generator's kicked in.
What are you talking about?
Sarah heads down before I can ask another question to check out the noise. About 8 minutes later, Sarah returns. She crawls back into bed and tells me, no biggie, Seal's on the stationary bike. He wants to get some mileage in and didn't want to ride in the snow. The next morning we wake up at 7 a.m. and the generator sound is still making the same noise. This time I head downstairs. As I get closer, I can hear the noise coming from the gym, and music's playing in the background. I open the door to the gym, and a wave of hot air attacks me. It's like someone's holding a hairdryer on high and pointing it at my face. The room feels like a sauna, and the windows are all fogged up. Straight ahead, I see Seal on the stationary bike with his shirt off and a puddle of sweat on the floor. He doesn't look up. Clearly, he knows I'm there. But he does not say a word, not even a hello or a good morning. He doesn't look happy. Shocker, I know.
He keeps riding. He rode the entire night. 10 hours straight.
Workout totals. 3.5 miles and 154 push-ups.
Day 25. Get your balls wet. Fear is one of the best motivators. Anger is the other. Seal.
Connecticut, 5 degrees, 0930.
Seal takes me on a 5-mile run up Wanzer Hill. Wanzer Hill is the main road in my development, and it's so steep, it's almost vertical. There should be double black diamonds on the street sign. Cars can't get up it in good weather. Other hills don't even want to be in the same neighborhood as Wanzer Hill. It's that intimidating. Plus, there's snow and black ice everywhere, making the run slower, harder, colder. Didn't Seal just ride a bike all night? What the fuck? He didn't even stop. When we get home after the run, I complain that the tendon in my foot is killing me, recurring basketball injury, and my foot is swollen, really swollen.
I got a solution. Let's go into the lake and freeze your foot, Seal says.
Go into the lake? The lake's frozen.
I'm not playing. Let's go, he says.
I know this is the dumbest idea ever, but there's something about it I like. I get excited. I've always wondered how cold the water under the top layer of ice in a frozen lake is. We run down the hill from my house to the lake in 2 feet of snow. I'm in sneakers, socks, shorts, and a sweatshirt. It's about 300 yards at a steady decline. I stumble twice and faceplant before I reach the bottom. Seal descends flawlessly and effortlessly. When we arrive, he immediately takes off his shoes and finds a hole in the ice big enough to fit him, and jumps in. The lake is frozen, but not completely. Parts of the lake by the shore have thin patches of ice.
Hold on to the floating ice, he says. I swear this happened.
I crawl onto the frozen lake and inch my way toward the hole where Seal jumped in.
Get the fuck in, motherfucker. Get the fuck in.
He's lost his mind. No, I can't. I'm sorry. I can't.
Get the fuck in, motherfucker. Get the fuck in, he says again. His lips are blue.
You fucking pussy, Itzler. Get the fuck in. I take off my shoes. I take off my socks. This is insane.
Get in. Balls deep. Get in, Itzler.
I jump in up to my knees. It feels like someone sawing off my legs. Or maybe it feels like I wish someone would saw off my legs.
Deeper, he yells.
I inch my way deeper up to my waist. Then all of a sudden, his expression changes. It's no longer taut with anger. Now it's furrowed and worried.
We got 5 minutes till frostbite. Get out now.
What?
Don't touch your skin to the ice as you get out. It'll stick, he yells.
What?
Like that motherfucker in Christmas Story.
Grab your sneakers and use them as gloves. Climb out of the hole in the ice and crawl across the ice with your bare feet sticking up, he yells.
It takes 2 minutes to get to land. My mind is counting down like MacGyver.
We have about 3 minutes left until frostbite. We run up the hill toward my house with shoes off, barefoot in the snow.
Seal's yelling again. We have 2 minutes. Run!
Halfway up the hill, my body's fueled by fear. There isn't a coherent thought in my head other than get up this hill. My toes are going to fall off. I can't feel one thing from my knees down. With each stride I take, I feel like my legs could shatter like an antique teacup hitting the floor. This is bad.
Finally, we reach the top. We go inside, peel off our wet clothing, dry off with towels and coats and anything we can grab.
Sarah stands there, and I don't think I've ever seen her so angry.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen, she yells.
I'm sorry, I say. Sorry? You're a dad. Everyone knows not to go near ice on a frozen lake.
She turns to Seal. And you, she says to him, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Tell me what the medical benefit of jumping into a frozen lake is.
There is none, Sarah. This is what your husband signed up for. There's no benefit.
15 minutes later.
Seal comes and finds me and says, we gotta capitalize on this shit. We gotta capitalize on this adrenaline.
What?
We do 15 sets of 15 push-ups on the minute, 225 push-ups. The entire time I'm thinking to myself, nobody would ever believe this. Nobody. But I'm so far into it, I'm now embracing the challenges. It's like I'm over the hump and I can't help but feel a little proud. 20 minutes later. Seal comes into my bedroom. I'm sitting with my feet elevated to ease my swollen ankle. We only have 4 days left. We need to push our limits. Your work isn't done. You aren't ready to go back into the real world, Seal says. I pause and then realize he's right. My life with Seal isn't the real world. Then I think about him leaving. There's going to be a huge hole. These past 25 days have been like any other in my life. I didn't think this was possible, but I'm going to miss him. I'm going to miss the insanity. I'm going to miss the pain. I'm going to miss having him in charge. Let's make tacos tonight for dinner, I say. Tacos? Fuck tacos, he says. We're going into the steam room.
The steam room?
Yeah, the fucking steam room. Setting that bitch at 125 degrees and we're in there for 30 minutes. No dumping water on our heads, no talking, obviously, and only 12 ounces of drinking water allowed in. I'm going to test your will. Seal sets the temp dial for 125 degrees, and we wait 20 minutes until it's properly heated. We strip to our undies and go in. To maximize the effect, Seal tells me to sit on my hands and keep my arms locked straight. That will force our backs to be straight and our heads to be closer to the ceiling of the steam. Heat rises, he says. No kidding. By keeping our heads up, we will get maximum exposure, he repeats. So we go in. 5 minutes? Okay. 10 minutes? Okay. 12 minutes? I drink all 12 ounces of water. 15 minutes? Okay. 20 minutes? Not so okay. I hear a hissing sound. It's hard for me to see with my eyeball sweating. I hope the hissing isn't coming out of me. My heart rate is up and pounding. My skin looks like boiled chicken. I'm overheating. I'm nauseous. Seal sits in the opposite corner of the steam room and I can barely make him out. I hear him whistling and it's driving me mad. It sounds like a Beach Boys song. It can't be. I'm hallucinating. Only 9 more minutes, I tell myself, but it's not working. I try to think about baseball, Jeter's baseball average, Mariano Rivera's whip. I'm losing my mind. Now I know how a Hot Pocket feels inside a microwave. 1, 2, 3, 4. I start counting to 100 in my head. 11, 12, 13. I'm drifting into faint city. I don't think I can do it, I say, finally breaking the 21 minutes of silence. I'm sorry. I don't even wait for him to respond. I leap up and thrust open the door, almost breaking the glass. Seal follows me out, steam pouring into the room as the door stays open. Okay, 30-second rest and then back in. I don't move. He looks closer. Whoa, he says, looking down at me crouched against the wall. You don't look so good. He looks blurry and his face is distorted like in a funhouse mirror. I respond, man, we need to abort, he says. Abort? I sit in the chair outside my steam room for what feels like a day, alone. Seal does not come to check on me. My head is pounding. After 35 minutes, I finally begin to cool down. My heart rate's at 119. I'm sweating like I'm in the desert in August. I down 5 Zicos, and it takes 90 minutes before I begin to feel remotely human. 2 hours later. I've relocated to my bedroom and Seal comes in. I'm under the covers watching CNN. He asks if I'm better. A little, I say. Good. Let's go.
Let's go?
You don't even know what suffering is, motherfucker, he says with a look like he means it. He's right. I've lived a sheltered life. He tells me to do a slow jog by myself outside to loosen up my joints. The ones that were fused together in the steam room or the ones that were frozen together in the lake. He wants me to understand myself better. He wants me to feel the isolation. I'm not sure where he's going with this. In fact, I don't know what the hell he's talking about. But I go outside, alone. Before I leave, he hands me a flashlight because it's starting to get dark so early now. Watch the black ice, he says. Thanks. I do a 4.5-mile slow jog. When I come home, Seal's waiting at the door. He's literally sitting outside by my front door in the snow, eating a fucking apple. Nice work. You need that personal mind frame, he says. I still have no idea what he's talking about. Now, get your strength up and do 100 push-ups before you can come in the house. That's 10 every 30 seconds. I'm not fucking around, man. This isn't sleepaway camp in upstate Fuckville. Again, what? But I get down and start to knock out the push-ups. Seal disqualifies my first one. Start over. Your nose needs to touch the snow. We're past this make-believe shit.
20-100.
Fuck, tacos is right. I eat up 2 veggie burgers. I'm obsessed with the Morningstar Griller's Prime, and tonight, I feel like I can eat the whole box. As soon as the microwave beeps, indicating my meal's ready, in comes Seal.
You got a choice. Eat first and do 250 push-ups, or eat after and choose to do what's behind curtain number 2.
All of a sudden, he's Bob Barker? I don't even ask a single question. I just say, give me door number 2. Well, more push-ups. We do 12, then 8, then 6, then 4 push-ups on the 15-second mark, followed by sit-ups where we do as many as we can for 60 seconds. We rest 1 minute, then repeat for 30 minutes. I'm a beaten man. Workout totals, 9.5 miles, 775 push-ups, 125 sit-ups, 21 minutes steam, frozen lake.
Day 26, primary target. Know what's important to you and protect it at all costs. Seal. Connecticut, 29 degrees, 0800. I'm fully recovered from the steam room incident. We're still in Connecticut, and Seal and I head out for a 4.5-mile mountain loop near my house. I'm breathing just through my nose. It feels like I'm flying. I check my time. 35 minutes, 17 seconds. That's 3 minutes faster than my previous personal best. Course record for me. I'm feeling good. We get home, shower, and meet in the den. I turn the TV on. Getting Seal to watch television can be difficult. The only thing I've seen him sit still for is sports. There are a few college bowl games on today, so I'm hoping he won't ask me to wear the 50-pound weight vest in the second and fourth quarters. He seems fairly content on the couch. I wonder if he's thinking about leaving. The thought has been on my mind the last couple of days. At first, to be honest, I couldn't wait for the month to be over. But he's starting to grow on me. I appreciate his concern for my family's safety. It makes me wonder. Say, Seal, I say, what would you do if there was an intruder in the house? Slowly, Seal turns and looks at me. He holds me with an even, unemotional stare. Then he turns back to the TV without answering my question. No, really, I say, what would you do? He shakes his head slowly. I think you know what I'd do, he says to the TV. Well, tell me. I would protect the primary. Well, what's the primary? That's the million-dollar question, he says. What's your primary, Jesse? What would hurt you the most to lose? This big-screen TV? Those gold record awards you own? Jewelry? Cash? What do you hold most dear? No, I say, none of that. Well, he asks. My wife and son. Exactly, Jesse, he says. They're your primary. And as long as I'm in the house, they're my primary, too. You ask me what I would do? I would protect my primary at any cost. And unfortunately for you, you're my third option. At that moment, I realized that despite all the time I've spent with Seal, he's always had an eye on Sarah and Laser. The plumber, the white van, the waiter. It's all been about protecting us. Sure, we've been training, but there's more to our relationship now. We have primaries to look after. 2100.
I tell Seal that I have to spend a few hours closing the books for the year, and I beg him not to interrupt me. He agrees. Go ahead and handle your shit, man. I pull out all my notes and to-do lists for the past year and take some personal inventory. I also make my annual donations and send out our holiday cards. It feels good to close out the year. Once I come out from my office, he tells me, we gotta get one in. We go out for a 5-mile run at top speed. I push, my body responds. Holy shit, I feel fit. Almost immortal. I feel up for anything. I think this is starting to pay off. Workout totals, 9.5 miles. Day 27, 1,000 push-ups. I don't celebrate victories, but I learn from failures. Seal.
Connecticut, 12 degrees, 0800.
Seal says, today is goal day. Today, all your hard work pays off. We're going to see if you can do 1,000 push-ups. I start the day off with 10 quick sets of 10 push-ups. We take a 30-second rest in between sets. Feeling good, I rest. Total, 100 push-ups.
2 hours later.
First, 1 through 18 push-ups and then one set of 29. 8 minutes and 58 seconds. Maybe I'm relying on muscle memory as I've done this already, but still feeling good.
Rest again. Total, 200 push-ups.
1 hour later. 1 through 18 push-ups and then one set of 29. 8 minutes and 30 seconds. Now it's a struggle. I'm grinding these out. The last 50, I had to hold the plank position for a few seconds before I go down and up. Total, 200 push-ups.
3 hours later.
1 through 18 push-ups and then one set of 29. 8 minutes and 30 seconds. Now I'm getting into really hard territory. I'm taking long breaks in between each push-up group, but I'm doing it. My triceps are on fire. Total, 200 push-ups.
1600.
25, 25, 25, 25, 1 through 18, 15, 14. These are brutal. My arms are shaking like a leaf. My triceps feel like they have pins in them. It's a feeling I've never had before, and I'm actually a bit concerned. Seal tells me to push through. My arms are trembling. Push through it, he yells. I have to take a 2-minute break before I complete the set of 15. Then I need a 5-minute break before I can complete the last 14. But once I'm close, there's no giving up. Total, 300 push-ups. In case you can't count them, that's 1,000. 1,000 push-ups in one day. Holy shit. I take a seat on my couch by the steam room and smile. For the first time during this whole process, I'm truly proud of myself. Not because I did 1,000, but because I stuck with the journey. I think back to the first day Seal was here and the first set of push-ups we did. This proves to me that if you push the body will respond.
1900.
My body is inflated from all the push-ups. I feel like I'm wearing a wetsuit and someone has pumped air into it. I'm jacked up. But to Seal, victories are short-lived. He tells me he never celebrates an accomplishment. Once his goal is done, it's time for his next goal. Our work is not done. It's time for our next goal. Seal and I head out for a 3.5-mile run. When we get home, Seal tells me to get some shut-eye and that I earned it. I'm not sure, but I think that's a compliment. He's actually proud of me, too. I go into my room and throw on ESPN to watch some bowl highlights. Seal heads to his room. He goes and continues to do 25 push-ups every 10 minutes, 4.5 hours until midnight. He does 2,500 for the day. Superhuman. With fitness, there's never a finish line. You can always do better. For me personally, I guess I probably have 30 or 40 years left on Earth. And how many of those am I going to be young enough and healthy enough to do things? I want to experience the best stuff I can. I've never jumped off a cliff. I should just jump off a cliff because I'm only here once. That's how I approach things now. That's how I feel about things. That's how I live my life. 1,000 push-ups is something I could have never imagined doing. It just shows that repetition and consistency equals results. Workout totals, 3.5 miles and 1,000 push-ups.
Day 28. Up the ante. If you don't challenge yourself, you don't know yourself. Seal.
Connecticut, 17 degrees, 0700. This morning we go for an 8.5-mile run up Leech Hollow Road and back. Getting to Leech Hollow Road is not easy. My friend Fish calls it the big boy run. It's a freak show. Crazy hills, grueling course, and 8.5 miles is a good run no matter how you slice it. I've run this course with many friends, and only a select few have ever been able to complete it. Anyway, I run it in 1 hour, 17 minutes, and 41 seconds, an 8-minute, 57-second average, with negative splits, which means clocking a better time the second half of the run than the first. I'm 2 minutes faster on the way back, and I'm feeling psyched. When we get home, the real fun begins.
We have to up the ante, Seal says.
The lake? I ask. Seal nods. I begin to nod with him. We stand there, both understanding the mission and nodding together. One little problem. This time there are no holes in the lake. It's frozen solid, 6 inches thick. There are even kids playing hockey on it.
I have a plan, Seal says.
If you two knuckleheads even think about going through the ice again, Sarah says, don't bother coming back inside. It's frozen solid. It's like my wife is a crystal ball or something. I didn't even see her standing there. She knows the nod, but I know Sarah has a conference call later, so we wait. When Seal is sure my wife isn't watching, he sneaks down to the lake, grabs a boulder, and starts banging on the ice. And when I say boulder, I mean boulder, like from the Flintstones. This thing is huge, and Seal has to bend down and lift with his legs and hold it with both hands before he can hoist it up. I look over at the kids skating, and the game comes to an ice spraying hockey stop. They're all watching Seal. Seal pounds away. Boom, crackle, crackle, again. Boom, crackle, crackle, again. Boom, crackle, crackle. The hockey players head to solid ground. The ice breaks. I think somewhere in Seal's inner ear, there's a tiny orchestra playing the theme song from Rocky. It's like he's at the top of the stairs of the Philadelphia Museum of Art, and he raises his arms in a victory pose. He gives a primal scream of, yes! Socks off, shirt off, he's in. I start to hear the Rocky theme too. I can do this. Socks off, shirt off, I'm in. We repeat this twice and sprint up to my house to get warm. I'm still freezing, but feel amazing. Sarah stands in the doorway. She glares at me but doesn't say a word. She gives the same stern look to Seal. I feel like I'm 7. Seal, who doesn't raise his eyes, looks like he's 5. My son's staring at my feet and looking puzzled. They have a reddish, purplish tint to them. And Seal? Now? He's on the treadmill. We're in the penalty box for about half the day. Sarah wasn't really that mad, at least not at our house guest. It's like she wanted to be mad, but she couldn't. Maybe it's because she knows all of this is coming to an end, or perhaps she knows I'll probably never do this again. It's not safe. 5 o'clock p.m., 30 minutes before dinner. We do 10 push-ups on the 32nd hand for 10 sets, every 5 minutes. That's 100 total. Then it's 1 through 10, 10 to 1, and 3 sets of 30. Another 300 down. 8 o'clock p.m. I'm in the bedroom with Sarah, packing. We're going to Atlanta tomorrow, but just staying overnight. What day is Seal leaving again? Sarah asks. In 2 days, I say. He'll come to Atlanta and then spend New Year's with us back here in Connecticut, but is going home from there. I'm going to miss him, she says. Sarah had already told me that Seal was the best house guest we've ever had. She didn't have to tell him how to do anything or where anything was. He didn't need any instructions. He was spotless, thoughtful, and polite. But when Seal really won her over is when Sarah's grandmother, Nanny, stopped by one day in Atlanta. Nanny's right out of the Andy Griffith Show. Seal was a total gentleman and did everything for her. Carried her bags, made her breakfast, and walked with her on his arm. She adored him. When Nanny was around, I think she was Seal's primary. Nanny kept referring to Seal as that nice young man. She would say, Jesse, that nice young man, that friend of yours is just darling. Sarah seems to be very intently folding a blouse. I've been thinking, she says after a minute or two, we should try and get Seal to stay a bit longer. As I'm looking at my wife packing, it makes me realize what a difference a month can make. I know Seal infinitely better than I did when he first showed up, but I still don't know him. But I think that's by design. Sarah snaps me back to present day with a toss of a diaper. I guess she knows something I don't. I catch the diaper and I'm about to make my way to Laser when she looks at me. I've been giving it some thought. and I think I'd like to start a workout routine with Seal, too.
Okay, sweetie, if that's what you really want, then ask him. I'm acting cool, but I'm psyched.
Just don't expect me to jump in the frozen lake, she says.
Workout totals. 8.5 miles, 300 push-ups, frozen lake.
Day 29. Sloppy seconds.
I don't stop when I'm tired. I stop when I'm done. Seal.
Connecticut to Atlanta, 36 to 88 degrees, 0900.
We're leaving for a day trip to Atlanta this afternoon to do another check on the house, but first we head out on a 10.6 mile run in the rain and slush. It's warmed up a bit, and the roads are sloppy.
We gotta get one good one in before the flight, Seal says.
The run's from my house to a diner on Route 22. I have no idea what the name of the diner is, but it's the only diner near us. I also know that when we drive up to the house from New York City, it's a marker for us. When we get to the diner, it's still a 15-minute drive, so the run's not going to be fun. As predicted, it's lonely, miserable, hilly, and tough. I tell Sarah we will be about an hour and a half and that we're running to the diner.
You're going to run to the diner that we order takeout from? You got to be kidding me.
I kid you not, I reply.
Can you pick me up some, she says with a laugh.
Seal must not have taken his patience pill when he took his handful of vitamins today, because as soon as we start the run, he takes off. Every few straightaways, he becomes visible for the first few miles, but then he completely disappears. He beats me there by 18 minutes. Time, 1 hour, 36 minutes. Sarah jumps in the car and picks us up at the diner 95 minutes after we leave the house.
90 minutes later.
It's noon. We have to get to the airport in a few hours, I say to Seal. Sarah will kill us if we're late. 2 minutes later, he has me on the treadmill, walking 20 minutes on a 15-degree incline at a 3.6 pace. We'll get there, Seal says. Next, it's 3 pull-ups every 45 seconds for the next 10 minutes. We gotta go.
Relax.
We do 10 push-ups on the 30-second mark for another 10 minutes. Right before the last set, Seal says, we clocked out. Let's go.
Workout totals. 10.6 miles, 20 minutes on treadmill on incline of 15, 100 push-ups, 30 pull-ups.
The skinheads. I don't like assholes and I don't like bullies. Seal. The weather in Atlanta is fantastic. The hot Georgia sun is pumping out punishing heat rays. I'm sitting alone at the pool in my backyard reading the paper when our cleaning lady approaches. She's flustered. Her English is good, but sometimes the words are hard for her to find.
You come, Mr. Jesse, she says. I concern. Two guys in front yard ask for owner. Something no right, Mr. Jesse.
So I throw on a shirt and go out front. Sure enough, there are two guys approximately 20 years old, in white t-shirts and jeans, and they're climbing over our small hedges and approaching the front door. Both are heavily tatted up, both have shaved heads, both reek of marijuana. She's correct. Something no right. It's mostly a mix of doctors, lawyers, and young professionals who live in our Atlanta community. People go out for jogs in the neighborhood or ride expensive mountain bikes around the cul-de-sac, and everybody smiles. From the street, you can see our house quite clearly. Nothing spectacular. It is a well-groomed yard, better than average-sized driveway, and a decent-sized house. While we do have surveillance cameras around the exterior, you'd have to look closely to notice them.
Can I help you guys? I say in my most laid-back voice.
Sure can, says skinhead number one. Can you tell me who the owner of the house is?
Well, what exactly do you guys need?
We just moved into the neighborhood, son, he says.
The guy calls me son. I'm at least 20 years older than him.
We want to meet 1,000 neighbors, each and every one of them. If we do, we get points for college. Number one smiles and shows me some bullshit pad on a clipboard. We already met Usher today. You know where Usher lives, dude? Well, we seen him.
I know Usher doesn't live anywhere near me. I really think these guys are casing out my house.
Holy shit. Sorry, guys. I don't live here. I'm only a guest, I lie.
Well, then, can you get your daddy or the queen bee? We need to meet the actual owner, number two says. He looks like a number two. Did this guy really just tell me to get my daddy? You want me to get my dad? Yeah, or get the queen bee, number one laughs. Just get someone in the house that lives here. No problem, I say. Hang tight. I walk into the kitchen. Seal is making one of his military-grade shakes. We have a situation, I say, looking out through the window that faces the front lawn. Seal follows my stare. A smile spreads across his face as he looks through the window. The skinheads start to leave as if they sense something isn't right. Seal calmly finishes drinking his shake. Showtime, he says. 20 minutes later, Seal's back, walking through the front door. He has his iPhone in his hand. He shows me a close-up photo of number two. His face is as red as his neck, and his cheeks are puffed up like a blowfish. His eyes are stretched with fear. This him? Seal asks. In the photo, you can see Seal's hand wrapped around the guy's neck. It reminds me of when Darth Vader picks the guy up by his neck in Star Wars. Yeah, that's him. Seal puts the phone in his pocket and walks over to the sink. He takes the glass from which he was drinking the shake and washes it. Well? I explained to them I was the homeowner and that I don't care for motherfuckers like them on my property, and if they ever came back, I would make sure they never walk again. Seal puts the glass back in the cupboard. I really don't think they'll be back. Resolutions. I don't want what you guys have. Seal. It's the last day of the year. Most people make resolutions on New Year's Eve, and I finish mine on the plane back to Connecticut this AM. Sarah and I are having a bunch of friends up to the house for dinner. We'll go around the table, and everybody will say their goals for the coming year before dessert. I pretty much have what I'm going to say in my head. It's more like bullet points in my head. I'm a big fan of winging it, obviously. The whole Wonderful Wednesday clan's coming. A few years ago, we made it an annual thing that we would get together for New Year's Eve up at the Connecticut house. Sarah calls us the Super Friends because we also like to run marathons and other races together. There's a lot of truth to the super part. I've met, worked, and hung around a lot of people over my years, but the friends I have now are friends for life. These are the guys and girls I want to be in a foxhole with. The day and night goes like this. We all go for a 9-mile run up Wandsor Hill and then have dinner, wine, whatever, and everyone sleeps over. During dinner, the conversation shifts to the resolutions. I'm curious about what Seal will say if he takes a turn. In fact, I think everybody here is wondering what Seal will say, if anything. One friend wants to quit her job and start her own business. Another has decided he wants to move to California's wine country. When it's Seal's turn, the whole table quiets. I don't want the same shit you guys want. I'm not looking for anything else. I'm going to do the same shit I've been doing, he says, only I'm going to do it better. Seal excuses himself and stands. He then goes downstairs to ride the stationary bike in the basement. When he returns later, my friends start to ask him questions. They're drawn to him. A big circle is formed around Seal in the living room. He's still sweating from the ride, but he's placed a towel on his lap to catch any dripping sweat that could potentially end up on our carpet. The alcohol has loosened everybody up a bit. He looks at us all. His armor's come down. It's as though he's sorry for coming on so strong at the dinner table. I just think you don't give your lives enough credit, he says softly. Day 30. Last run. If you can see yourself doing something, you can do it. If you can't see yourself doing something, usually you can't achieve it. Seal. New York City, 40 degrees, 12:30. It's after lunchtime and we just drove back to New York City. Seal gave me the morning off. I'm in the kitchen cleaning up. Sarah and Seal are in the living room. And then I see my wife in the doorway. How'd it go with asking Seal to stay and train you, I ask. He can only stay one more day, Sarah says. He's leaving tomorrow. My wife can be a very convincing woman. I'm surprised. Did he say why? Business. Business? Sarah shrugs. That's it? That's it. I'm both disappointed he's not staying and bursting with curiosity. I know better than to ask him, though. Anyhow, I like the image I conjure of SEAL pulling off a midnight hostage rescue in Syria or something.
Oh, he did say he'd come back to train me, Sarah says.
Really?
Yes, provided I do everything he says and nothing is off limits.
Just that moment, SEAL walks into the kitchen. He's wearing the biggest smile I've ever seen him wear.
What's for dinner tonight? SEAL asks. A big red chicken?
He cackles like it's the funniest thing anyone has ever said.
We head out to Central Park for a 6.1 mile loop. It will be our last run.
My first run with SEAL in New York City was 30 days ago. We ran the exact same loop. We did it in 56 minutes and 4 seconds, a 9 minute and 20 second per mile pace. After 1 month with SEAL training me, I'm running a 7 minute, 50 second per mile pace. As usual, we don't talk on the run, even though it was to be our last. There was no final test, no congratulatory conversation, nothing. Like two running partners who run every day. There wasn't anything unusual about the evening either. We had dinner together in the apartment, SEAL played with Laser, Sarah chatted with him. Although she tried not to show it, I could tell she was genuinely sad our time with SEAL was coming to a close. So was I. Today's splits? Mile 1, 8 minutes 2 seconds. Mile 2, 7 minutes 56 seconds. Mile 3, 7 minutes 26 seconds. Mile 4, 7 minutes 45 seconds. Mile 5, 7 minutes 43 seconds. Mile 6, 7 minutes 32 seconds. Total, 46 minutes and 34 seconds. Average pace, 7 minutes 45 seconds. Pre-SEAL, I sometimes would be on the couch and not want to do whatever needed to be done, and I'd be like, fuck it, and blow it off. Procrastinate. I don't think like that anymore. Just get off the couch and do it is what I remind myself. SEAL would never say fuck it. He'd get off the couch and do it, regardless of the time, the temperature, or how tired he was. I absorb some of that just get it done and there are no excuses attitude. I'm grateful for that. My perspective on time has changed too. I got so much more done when SEAL was here. I was much more efficient. Now if I have to drive a few hours in the car to get somewhere, I don't get frustrated. Rather, I think about how lucky I am to be sitting in a warm and comfortable environment. It's weird. Maybe I became more present or maybe I'm more appreciative, but whatever it is, I view time differently. Maybe it's a newfound patience or maturity. My will to not stop or quit has also changed, both in training and at work. SEAL has an I don't give a shit attitude that really makes him different. He's an African-American Navy SEAL, of which there aren't many. An African-American who competes in endurance sports that are dominated by Caucasians. He doesn't give a shit. SEAL does what SEAL wants to do. He doesn't live the way everyone tells him he's supposed to live. And he does it with purpose. I admire him for that. His normal has been abnormal, and we have that in common. The first day SEAL came to move in, he told me I needed to control my mind. I thought it was just a saying or a throwaway comment, but I think there might be more truth to it than I originally thought. Our minds sometimes tell us little lies about ourselves, and we believe them. We think we can't do this or that. It's not true. I've never had a real resume. I've always believed in a life resume. I take a look at SEAL, who's writing in his logbook. He just wants to get better tomorrow. That's what I want now, too. Workout totals, 6 miles. Day 31, a sad day. The only easy day was yesterday. SEAL. New York City, 31 degrees, 0800. I wake up on my own at 8 o'clock a.m. and the house feels different. The energy's changed. I go to SEAL's room, but there's no SEAL. He's gone. The room is spotless and the bed is perfectly made with military corners. You could bounce a quarter off it. Everything is exactly the way it was before he arrived. It's like he was never even here. Eerie. When I walk into the kitchen, I see a note. It's from SEAL. No big send-off, no big goodbye, no big anything. Just 3 words. Hey man, thanks. That's it. That's all he wrote. The guy woke me up at 5 a.m. for 30 days but didn't wake me up to say goodbye? It starts to sink in that it's over. Seal has returned to base. Though Seal left no trace in the bedroom, his fingerprints are all over the rest of the house. For example, every bedroom now has a fire extinguisher and a flashlight. Laser Sarah and I have full fire suits in case we wake up one night and, God forbid, the place is an inferno. And if the shit really hits the fan, behind our bar is an inflatable knapsack that turns into a life raft with oars and an attachable motor. It's there just in case some 9/11 shit happens. If anybody asks about it, I say what Seal said to us. It's our escape vehicle out of Manhattan, bitch. I also made a recent purchase at an outdoor furniture store in Atlanta, just in case I have to camp out on somebody. Seal left an indelible mark on me. I've never been stronger, faster, or mentally tougher. Take me to a frozen lake and I'll show you. I can do 1,000 push-ups in a day. I smoke the times I used to do around the Central Park Loop. I literally don't have an ounce of fat on me. But getting me in supreme shape was only part of what Seal did for me. I have houses, a driver, fly privately. I have all these things. Seal has a military ID and cash. That's what he walks around with, just a backpack of belongings. He didn't want my life, and I wanted his. For starters, I'm going to simplify things. I'm going to try to get down to 30 items of clothing. I'm going through my closet and the extra shit in the garage and getting rid of stuff. I started deleting all my emails, and it felt great. I started not answering people right away, and it felt fantastic. Seal clearly didn't want any part of our lives. I really admired how easy he lived his life. He didn't have to listen to others or have a team of people weigh in when making decisions. Part of that comes with the territory, and I get it. The simplicity that Seal has is one of the most important things in life. He gets to do what he loves every day. He lives stress-free. When Seal broke both feet in the ultramarathon with the 20,000-foot climb, it wasn't the first time. He breaks his feet often when he runs grueling ultras. He has a hole in his aorta that surgeons can't seem to close. He's asthmatic, and he truly hates to run. But he runs because he raises a lot of money for charity when he does to help the families of SEALs who died on the battlefield. One of the most emotional speeches I ever heard was Jimmy Valvano's at the ESPY Awards. Dying of cancer with only months to live, he told the audience these important words. "Don't give up," he said. "Don't ever give up." I hired Seal because I wanted to get in the best shape of my life. I also hired him because I liked the unexpected. And what better way to take a risk than having a Navy SEAL live with me for a month to train me? Finally, I hired him to get out of my routine, to shock the system, to mix things up so I could approach opportunities and challenges differently. But I got much more than what I paid for. "It's about protecting what you have," he said to me about being a SEAL. He might have been talking about defending democracy or freedom or saving us from terrorists, but I think he was talking about protecting something closer to home. Now that SEAL's gone, I realize I don't need a lot of the crazy stuff in my life. These challenges I keep putting in front of myself to fulfill me, I'm not going to do any more of that. I'm staying put and focusing on the little things. I don't need manufactured adventures in my life to change me. But maybe the most important thing I learned from SEAL was the level of appreciation he has for difficulty. The harder the training, the more courage it took to do, and the more satisfaction was derived from it. SEAL taught me that you only get one shot at life and you should find out what's in your reserve tank. Coasting is for pussies, as SEAL would say, and it's when you dig deep that you feel the most alive. He lives his life that way, and some of that rubbed off on me. Epilogue. A couple of months after SEAL moved out, Sarah and I took a short vacation to the Bahamas. I invited SEAL to come down for a few days of R&R. It was going to be a quick trip, but I wanted to see if he was interested in joining us. "Roger that," he said. He brought no luggage, only his bike and a stationary bike setup. "I'm going to get a couple of 100 miles," then he said. "On the island? Nah, in my room." We were there for 3 days. He put the privacy sign on his doorknob, and he never left his room. The most beautiful setting in the world, girls, gambling, ocean the color of a Dodgers hat, he never went out. He just pushed his bed up against the wall so he could face the ocean and ride. Ocean Club, the Atlantis, 27th floor was Seal's workout center. He said he was training for a bike ride across America. 1 year later. I'm in my office with Kish. The phone rings and she picks it up. She's smiling. "It's for you," she says with her hand over the receiver. "Who is it?" I whisper. "Seal," she whispers back. "Hey, man, how are you?" "Good," Seal says. "What's going on?" "Just giving you a heads up, I'm in New York for some meetings today," he says. "Cool," I say. "You want to crash with us?" "Nah, man, I don't want to impose on you. Just want you to know I'm in town." "Well, where are you going to stay?" "I'm just going to sleep in Central Park," he says. I look out the window of my office. It's snowing and my computer says 14 degrees. "Roger that," I say. I'm thinking it's going to be 70 and sunny. Acknowledgements. I've always been a team sports guy. All great teams have outstanding teammates that are good at their positions. This book would not have been possible without the hard work of my teammates, Jennifer Kish, Lisa Leshny, Turney Duff, Rick Flynn, Mark Edelman, Adam Padilla, Brian Black, Erica Jaffe, Mark Brown, Johnny Photo, Joe Holder, Dina Levine, Stella Brown, Paige Luther, Chelsea Kardukas, Kate Hartson, and the entire Center Street staff. Without them, there's no way this book would have come to fruition. This book would obviously not have been possible without the support of my amazing wife, who let this outrageous stuff go on under her very own roof. Honey, I will not jump in a frozen lake again. Fingers crossed. Last, I want to thank Seal for investing 31 days of his life to live with our family. The lessons I learned extend far beyond fitness. Thank you. Great teammates believe in each other. Roger that.
This has been a Hachette Audio production of Living with a Seal. 31 Days Training with the Toughest Man on the Planet. Written and read by Jesse Isler. Produced and directed by Christine M. Farrell. Recorded by Tommy Herron. Audio editing by Bianca Ruffin. Mastering by James Bennett. Living with a Seal is also available in print and digital formats from Center Street, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette Audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2015 by Jesse Itzler. Audio production copyright 2015, Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. In accordance with the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, the duplicating, uploading, and electronic sharing of any part of this audiobook without the permission of the publisher constitutes unlawful piracy and theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like to use material from the audiobook other than for review purposes, prior written permission must be obtained by contacting the publisher at permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.